This presentation has been previously broadcast.
Fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
It is Cale Clark. It is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. Toll free to talk to me or my guest. I've got an incredible guest that I can't wait to introduce to you in just a moment. 888-914-9149, our listener line sponsored by the Catholic Order of Foresters Life Insurance. You can also email the program, of course, become a shadow producer, send me a show idea. The address, the email address is kale@relevantradio.com. And you can, of course, find me on the X app owned by Elon Musk. I'll tell you what, Elon Musk kind of pictures into something we're going to talk about today, because we're going to talk about AI. We're going to talk about artificial intelligence and human flourishing, artificial intelligence and real humanity. And I don't know, are we headed towards an idyllic future? Maybe life will be kind of like the Jetsons and we'll have our Tesla Optimus bots serving our every whim, or are we headed for a dystopian future filled with Terminators? I don't know. This is going to be a fascinating conversation that we're going to have with my guest today, and I want to introduce him to you right now. He's a friend of the program, but it's been a few years since he's been on. He is a professor of management at Florida Atlantic University in Boca Raton, Florida, and also the policy director of the Madden Center for Value Creation. I don't know if it has anything to do with John Madden, but if it did, it'd be very, very cool. I don't think it does, though, but that's a great institution as well at Florida Atlantic University. He's also the author of Managing the Good Life. Just came out an incredible book. It's a commentary on Aristotle's Nicomachean Ethics aimed at business practitioners. That is probably worthy of another show, but my guest today is Professor Mike Ryle. Welcome back to the show, Mike. It's so good to have you on.
Hi, Cale. Thanks for that great introduction, and I'm so honored to be on the Cale Clark Show. It's just great. Thank you very much.
Well, believe me, the honor is all mine, and of course, I got to know you a few years ago when you were teaching at the University of Toronto at the Rotman School of Management.
Right.
You go to FAU, and the first thing that happens is the basketball team gets to the Final Four. So explain what happened this year. I don't know what's going on now, but
we didn't do it again this year. So I can't claim causation. Correlation is not causation. So.
Well, speaking of games, Michael, you were trained as a game theorist. Now, this has nothing to do with basketball. Tell us what game theory really is and why you wanted to study it.
Mm-hmm. So game theory is mostly a branch of economics that is you might think of it as sort of the science of strategy, if you want. Mm. What makes it unique is that it allows us to think through situations in which the actions that someone is taking, the outcomes of the actions that someone's taking is dependent upon the actions of other people. Mm-hmm. So if you think of an actual game, you know, solitaire, playing a hand of solitaire, you may have some algorithm as to how you play solitaire, but basically what other people are doing in the room doesn't matter to you. But when you're playing poker, you know, how you play your hand and what actions you take and what the outcomes are going to be, whether you win or not, are going to depend very heavily on other people, whether they're bluffing, you know, and so on. Yeah. So you really have to think through what other people are doing. And so that's why it's called game theory. But basically, if you think about it, these kinds of situations are endemic in human life. So certainly I teach business strategy. That would be a big area. Politics is a big area, and actually AI itself, deep learning made a major breakthrough by having the algorithms being pitted against each other. They actually learn much more quickly when you put them in a game and have them compete. So in a nutshell, that's basically what game theory is.
That's a great answer. Professor Mike Ryle from Florida Atlantic University is my guest. We're talking about artificial intelligence and human flourishing. And before we get into the human flourishing part, I want to talk to you about AI. Now, you recently gave a presentation mm-hmm. on this in Madrid, in Spain, mm-hmm. at King Carlos University. Do I have that right?
Yeah, Carlos III. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not to be confused with King Charles III or KC3, as I like to call him. I guess Spain had their own KC3. Yeah, I've got all the merch. I've copyrighted that phrase, by the way. But anyways, so you gave this incredible presentation, and I was so fascinated by this. I wanted to talk to you about this on the air because AI is mm-hmm. something that's touching all of our lives, but right. whether or not it's a good thing is kind of still up in the air. So first, let me ask you this, Mike. What exactly is, I know it might seem like a basic question, but what is artificial intelligence? What is AI?
Well, I guess there's kind of two ways that you might answer that question. So one is what is AI now? You know, what is the technology that we call AI now? What does it do? And then there's the, well, what is sort of the AI project? You know, when you think about computer scientists and the stuff that they're working on and what their aims are, you know, what is that? So I'll answer the second question first. I think the gold ring of AI research and AI development is to develop what they would refer to as human-like intelligence.
Okay.
So they like to do that. And you know, there are people, I think a lot of people in that community that believe that, you know, that we may actually create intelligent machines that have something that is actually very similar to human intelligence. Then there's the other answer, which is, well, what is it doing right now? And what it's doing right now is actually quite far from that. We still have a long ways to go. Basically, what AI does now is very, very sophisticated pattern recognition. So if you imagine, you know, that the AI that we're all familiar with is you get on Netflix or you get on Amazon and you know, you look at something and the screen will say, you know, people like you also bought, you know, these goods or based on your viewing history, you know, we think that you would like these movies. And so that's the sort of pattern recognition that these companies have huge databases, and they look at what patterns they see in what people are buying or viewing or whatever. And they use that to, you know, look at your viewing history and see sort of what category do you seem to fit into. Now, that was very basic. We've had that for a long time. The thing that's taking everyone by storm now are these large language models like ChatGPT that seem amazing. And for those of us, I'm imagining most of your audience has at least played around with this. I mean, you have these conversations with a computer that seem very human-like, very interesting and realistic. But nevertheless, although it does seem that way, that you're dealing with, you know, maybe, you know, a hidden person on the other end there, that isn't really what's happening. What's happening is they have basically a database. This is a simplified version, but basically you've got a database of everything ever written in human history or ever shown on the internet. And when you've got a database that big, what the AI does is it takes your question and it literally predicts, you know, it starts putting words in a sentence where it's predicting, you know, one word at a time. What is the most likely next word that goes here based on all of the patterns that the AI has found in all of this gigantic database? And it turns out when you've got that much data and you've got supercomputers, you can do a pretty good job of replicating patterns that look like human speech, which isn't to minimize this. I mean, I think this is a development that is akin to you know, the printing press. I mean, this is a huge technological development, but we don't want to confuse it with actual human intelligence. The computers are manipulating zeros and ones according to algorithms. You know, they're not really thinking about the meaning of life or what you're intending by your questions or anything like that. So it is amazing, but it does fall, you know, fairly far short of this human-like intelligence that is the gold ring of artificial intelligence research.
My guest is Professor Mike Ryle from Florida Atlantic University. We're talking about artificial intelligence and human flourishing. And Michael, you're a very optimistic person by nature, I would say. Always quick with a smile and a laugh, but maybe not when it comes to this, because just in talking to you about this and looking at your presentation, your views on AI are, I'd say, a little bit dark, maybe as dark as the eclipse that we had yesterday. Why is that?
Well, don't forget, there was sunshine shining around the eclipse. I think that there is a silver lining in AI, but I think that what we've seen AI being used for and how it's being used is not consistent with human flourishing. And so, I think that requires a little bit of unpacking, because one would have to put a stake in the ground in terms of, well, you know, what do we mean by human flourishing?
Right.
And then what are these pattern recognition tools doing? How are they being used? And are they being used in ways that seem to be promoting what we think of as human flourishing?
Yeah, and I do want to get into those questions of human flourishing too. And believe me, I've got quite a few questions for you about that. But I do want to ask you, just before we get into that, obviously the field of AI and sort of a related field, a cognate field, if you will, of robotics, that's pretty huge. Obviously, we've all seen videos of the Tesla Optimus bot and some things that it might be able to do in the future. We've seen even recent talk in recent days from Apple saying, hey, we're going to be all in on home robotics. Now, what that is going to look like, what they're going to propose, is kind of interesting. They've kind of canceled their Apple Car project. Maybe they're redeploying resources to this. But we're not quite there yet, I don't think. So my question to you is, what is the state of play right now for artificial intelligence?
Well, the state of play is basically what I just said. I mean, I think that the leading edge technology are these large language models. You've seen this remarkable. I would suggest to your viewers that if you Google AI Tokyo woman video, this will come right up. Right. And so
you gotta be careful of that, but yeah, exactly. But
right, yeah, well, it's no, right. Exactly. No, but I mean, this will be the OpenAI text to video technology. And, you know, just 1 year ago, I mean, literally 1 year ago, there were these sort of dopey videos that were being made by AI. There's one that I used in my presentation that was Will Smith eating spaghetti or some silly thing like that that went viral. And it's just horrible. You know, you can kind of tell it's Will Smith, but it's jerky. And, you know, the laws of physics don't seem to be really applying in the video. And then 1 year later, there is this video that is, I mean, you have to look really, really, really carefully to tell. And I think most people, you know, that probably aren't video experts wouldn't be able to tell that this isn't a woman walking down a Tokyo street. The input was something like, you know, a confident woman in a red dress and leather jacket walking down Tokyo street at night with rain reflecting on the street and warm neon signs in the back rooms in the back, something like that. And it is stunning. It zooms in on the woman's face and the skin and the hair. I mean, everything looks insanely realistic. As a business professor, I was talking with someone who knew an investor that was literally just a couple of weeks before this came out was going to invest $200 million in a state-of-the-art movie studio and saw this video and just said, you know what, the future is not human acting and the deal is off, you know, because this technology, although it's still in its infant form, I mean, you can imagine sort of writing a script and then feeding it to the AI and having it just do the thing. Now, again, though, this is all pattern, you know, this is all this sort of big data pattern recognition. And, you know, the computer isn't thinking, the computer isn't, you know, wondering why it has to do text to video instead of philosophy. You know, it doesn't think about those things. It's just, dealing with these very large databases and very powerful pattern recognition, and it's able to be trained to do these things. So that's the state of the art. Now, you can see where there are some problems. So one of the areas that I'm actively engaged in, earlier I made a joke about correlation isn't causation when you mentioned the basketball game and my appearing at FAU. But that is actually a problem. So what the AI does is it has very, very, very sophisticated capacities to find correlations in data and relationships in data and very subtle ones. But it doesn't, for example, know how to infer causation. And so as humans, we do that immediately, right? So if you God forbid, you walk out of your studio and there was a crumpled body, sort of in the door, you'd immediately start wondering what caused that to happen. Is there, did someone have a heart attack? Was there a break-in? You'd be immediately thinking about the causes. We do that very naturally. Computers have a very, very hard time of doing that. And you can see that that's going to be a problem for, i.e., self-driving cars, because the self-driving car has to think about how does its, what it does now in a dynamic world, what consequences is that going to have? And that's also a very game theoretic question. What is everyone else going to do? And what is everyone else doing? And what are other people's goals? What's happening? And so inferring causation is one of the leading edge issues in AI right now. So yeah, so you're gonna be able to have a new home helper robot. I'm sure that's gonna be coming along pretty soon that can dance to whatever music is on and get your martinis at 5 o'clock or whatever, or mow the lawn, or those kinds of things. But it isn't going, and it'll be able to do its chat with you, and according to the AI guys, it's going to teach your kid. It's going to be your kid's home instructor, and raise your kids, and all of these things. But we need to keep in mind what the technology is actually doing is pattern recognition and finding correlations in things, and then doing what it's programmed to do. If that makes sense.
It does make sense. And your example of self-driving cars, and obviously think about Tesla, that's one of the things that they're working on right now. They're trying to solve self-driving. But what do you do if the computer's vision sees what it thinks is a body on the road, but you have a choice between hitting that body or hitting the truck next to you to, what's better for the occupants of the car? That's a decision that's a little dicey for sure. And we're going to talk a little bit about the difference between the way these AI robots might think and the way we humans think in just a moment. Got to take a quick break right now on the Cale Clark Show. My guest is Professor Michael Ryle from Florida Atlantic University. We're talking about AI and human flourishing. Got a question? Give us a call, 888-914-9149. Be right back.
Explaining the faith so you can explain it to others. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Hey, welcome back to the program. My guest is Professor Michael Ryle, Professor of Management at Florida Atlantic University. We're talking about artificial intelligence in real humanity. Can AI help human flourishing, or is it more of a hindrance? Or is it sort of a wait-and-see type of situation? You can call in, too, if you've got a question for Professor Ryle. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. And Michael, just before the break, you told a little story about an executive thinking about investing $200 million in a movie studio and seeing this AI-generated film, if you will, saying, forget it, real actors won't be needed in the future. What a leap was made from that bizarre Will Smith video, I guess you could say the Fresh Pasta Prince video, if you will, to this artificial intelligence induced movie of a woman in Tokyo walking down the street. It was unbelievable, and I've seen the clips. Let me ask you this. Are there any other industries other than, say, the film industry? What other industries do you think are rife for disruption or destruction because of AI, that maybe we shouldn't be telling our kids to, you shouldn't study this anymore?
Well, that's a heck of a good question. And I think it's one that is going to be very difficult to answer. So I have another very close friend and colleague whose husband is a radiologist. And, you know, he's had a great life and continues to have a great life. And he says, boy, the last thing I would advise my kids to do is get into radiology. That's something that will certainly be taken over by AI. And probably, he says, you know, probably within his lifetime. And why? Well, that's because his job is really all about pattern recognition. But think about my industry. So we've seen a huge disruption, I mean, already in education. Mm-hmm. The good old days were about, you know, 1 year ago before these large language models came out, where the large textbook publishers had, you know, we have all this online technology. And so I could write an exam and have the students take the exam on their laptops, and it was all very handy and efficient and everything. And now I can't do that anymore.
Right.
It's a tough, you know, this is a very, believe me, all of my colleagues, this is an endless discussion these days. Because on the one hand, we realize, well, look, all of our students are going to have to be familiar with these tools. They're going to have them in the real world. And that's a fact. And therefore, we should be helping them use them effectively. At the same time, part of our job is to certify, for example, and when I teach a business strategy class, I need to certify that someone actually has the knowledge that one would expect for someone who has gone through a business strategy class. And so what I've, my solution to the thing is that I say, here's your take home project, or here's your take home essay, or whatever, any kind of a take home thing. I expect you to use ChatGPT or something like it, and do it, you know, please do it. Interestingly, as a side note, you would be surprised at the variation in the quality of the things that get handed in. So there's still something human. But for my written exams to assess what they know, I'm back to pencil and paper, closed book, no digital devices, with me standing there watching them. Right? So, you know, we've taken a step back on that in that sense. But it's, you know, but it's caused already a huge disruption in the higher education industry.
Oh, yeah. And you can see that. Well, my question for you was going to be, can you still tell who the superstars are, who the brilliant students are, even though they're using ChatGPT for some of this stuff?
So I think that ChatGPT is so good. I mean, you can see ChatGPT used clumsily, all right? So there is bad ChatGPT, and you can spot it immediately. But quite frankly, a smart student using ChatGPT skillfully, no, you can't tell. So that's why I require written exams. And the other thing that I've done, which is also new, is require attendance and incentivized classroom discussion, because in the interpersonal interactions with the students, I can tell, you know, fairly quickly who's getting it and who isn't. Mm-hmm.
Who's doing the readings and absolutely. No, it's, you got to go old school in these new school times.
Isn't that absolutely interesting?
Yeah, isn't it though? The old ways maybe really are best.
Right.
My guest is Professor Michael Ryle. You're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, 888-914-9149. Well, I think Michael, this is a good transition point to get into part two, which is not AI, but the human flourishing aspect. Can AI help us or hurt us in that regard? And I want to ask you about something that you've said, and something that you said in your presentation in Madrid, mm-hmm. that, okay, these large language models like ChatGPT, they're only going to get better and better and better. Version, you know, 10.0 is going to be unbelievable. But one thing that they will never be able to acquire is a human-like intelligence. One of the things you've said is that intelligence does not equal an inner life. Now, we've got a program on Relevant Radio called The Inner Life. Can you talk about that a minute?
Sure. So, you know, so when we think about human flourishing, you know, in our tradition, human flourishing means, you know, recognizing that you're a child of God and embracing God's mission, whatever, you know, whatever that may be. That's what human flourishing is all about. But I don't, you know, that I can't teach Catholicism, you know,
in you can't teach the catechism
in a land grant. You're right, exactly. and you know, and nor would that be appropriate. I have you know, Buddhists and Jainists and Hindus and atheists and all kinds of students in my class. But what is fairly uncontroversial, and this is why I teach Aristotle, and of course our own dear Thomas Aquinas sort of dialed Aristotle up to 11, we can teach philosophy and we can ask the question, you know, what is it about human beings? You know, so if we think about, let me put it this way, if we think about what does it mean to flourish as a human being, then we sort of have to, we have to put a stake in the ground for aspects of being human that apply across the board, you know, not, not just sort of based on gender, based on culture, but, you know, what is it about being human if we're going to make a comment about flourishing as human beings? And as it turns out, studies have been done. The positive psychology people have done massive surveys where they've looked at every faith tradition and every wisdom tradition. And they find that basically all of these traditions embrace sort of the same qualities that are required to become happy. And they are things like courage, temperance, justice, being connected to something greater than yourself. Wisdom is a big one. And so it does seem that there are some, there are qualities, you know, that are sort of go across the board that every major society and religion have figured out are important to becoming a happy, flourishing human being. What we do that that appears to be different, we don't seem to know, or have we identified any animals that have this capability, and we're not aware of anyone else in the universe that has this capability, which doesn't mean that there aren't. There, you know, we may find that there are animals with this quality, or maybe other entities in the universe with this quality. But for the time being, what humans seem to have uniquely is the ability to conceptualize, which is different than pattern recognition. So in AI, we were talking about pattern recognition. Thomas Aquinas would talk about imagination as a cognitive capacity. And as we've seen with, you know, your the text to video AI and the large language model AI, pattern recognition is actually an amazing quality. And so when we see animals, dogs and, you know, and chimpanzees and others that certainly have that capacity of imagination, it will take you very, very far. I mean, that is a lot of intelligence in pattern recognition. But what humans seem to have that is above and beyond that is the capacity to think abstractly. And in particular, to think about truth, which is an abstract concept, and goodness, which is an abstract concept. And if you think about having free will, in order to have free will, you need to be able to make choices according to, you know, what you think is best. But being able to choose what you think is best requires you to have an abstract concept of best, right?
Right.
So we need that capacity. And it turns out that that ability to conceptualize ends up in our ability to use language, because our words and the sounds that we make are symbols for concepts that we understand, and we understand the concept. We're able, for example, as a game theorist, we're able to, I think about putting ourselves in the other guy's shoes and thinking about, well, what is it that they want? What are they thinking? And so this capacity to conceptualize seems absolutely central to the kind of sentient animals that we are, human animals. And so what this means, what this must mean, it would be argued, is that in order to fully flourish as a human being, we must develop that particular capacity. I mean, all of our healthy capacity, you know, we want to be healthy animals, but to be human, really means developing wisdom to know what is true, to know what is truly good for us, to have the prudential knowledge to be able to implement what's good for us, and then the desire to sort of train our desire to want what is good for us. And then that goes to like the next level. So if you think about that and you go, wow, that is, you know, to really have the wisdom, the knowledge of how, and the desire to do the things that are really good for me, man, that's a high bar. I mean, I struggle with that every day. Now, take it to the next level, an order of magnitude more difficult, which is thinking about how I help others flourish. Now, that is sort of those capacities just taken, you know, way, 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 way up several notches. That's a very high bar, is to be able to really think about the other person and to help them flourish, to contribute to their flourishing. So we would say, well, you know, to really be banging on all cylinders as a human being, we must develop that capacity not only to do what's best for us, but we're really exhibiting that capacity if we can actually help others flourish. And so in order to do that, we need knowledge, we need to know what's true, we need to have wisdom, you know, we need to have prudence. So we need all of those sort of classical cognitive capacities in order to really flourish as human beings.
My guest is Professor Mike Ryle. You're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, 888-914-9149. We're talking about artificial intelligence and human flourishing. And wow, that was a lot of ideas that you just dropped on us, Mike. It just really makes it seem that these intelligent machines, if you will, they're going to have a lot of brain power, and we can see how the brain power might increase over time. But what makes us truly human, this idea of a human soul, and I know there's a bit of a theologians and scholars kind of argue about the fine points of where, how do you parse the mind and the soul? I don't really know, but this idea of aspects of the soul, memory, intellect, will, and I would probably add even imagination, as you were talking about, this idea of being able to imagine is so crucial for us as well. And you've talked a lot about how conceptualization is really the superpower here.
Yeah.
And the transcendentals, that's something that I don't think a Terminator bot is ever going to be able to pick up on, I don't think.
Right. Well, you know, you have to ask yourself whether your, you know, thermostat is ever going to, you know, be angry that it got dealt the thermostat hand instead of the Apple robot, Apple robot life. You know, I don't think so.
Yeah, why am I here?
But then if you're willing to go that far, and then of course this is all consistent, as our favorite Thomas Aquinas showed, this is all consistent and leads up to Revelation. You know, so you sort of take human thinking as far as it'll go, and you can get that far, and then anything beyond that would require revelation. Of course, as Catholics, we go right, sort of in a very natural way, into the theological part answer to that question, right?
No, absolutely. And I was, as you were speaking there, I was just thinking about how Scripture says that God has set eternity into the hearts of people, almost like He's programmed it in, if you will, to use a coding example. But in light of all of that, how do you think artificial intelligence could potentially undermine human flourishing?
Well, I think it, you know, just to not, it's not that I think it could, I think it is. So now I'll put on my, my sort of
the darkness.
Hello,
darkness, my old friend.
Bring in the darkness. So basically, but I think this is a little bit of an interesting story. So what originally happened with AI, and there's a terrific movie, if your audience hasn't seen it, it's called The Social Dilemma. And it's a movie that you know has lots of the key players in AI. It's a 2020 movie, so it's even now it's a little bit dated, but sort of the key players in AI talking about the development of AI and the problems that they see with it. And so there's been this unfolding of AI, as you would expect, the sort of organic unfolding of AI. And the first thing that happens is They want to sell stuff, right? So the first thing, of course, is the commercial value. So we've developed this AI. These companies have spent a lot of money on AI. And what are we going to do? And we're going to, you know, we're going to suggest things to you and hope that that prompts you to buy. But then you get these social media, right? So you get Facebook, you get Twitter in its original form, these various, you know, TikTok and so forth, and these, which is more recent. But what the AI people notice is that people get into these vicious cycles. In economics, we call this self-confirming bias. So it's a self-confirmation bias. So I like, you know, I like the Cale Clark show. And I'll go spend a lot of time on the Cale Clark show and listen to all the shows. And the AI is watching all of that, recording all of that. And it figures out that it can give you more things that you like that are just like the Cale Clark show. And then I'm, oh man, this is fantastic. You know, now I'm like doing all of these things that are basically giving me information that is consistent with what I already believe. Yeah. Right. And now
this is an awesome show.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And so it's, you know, it's giving you, feeding you back, and the AI people go, wow, this is fantastic. And so they ramp up these algorithms to really figure out what it is that you like. They make models of you. They call them virtual twins. So there's actually, you know, and they start feeding. But then they notice, well, wait a minute. This, you know, we're able to sort of get people to watch content, but people's beliefs are not what we think they should be. Now, the people in Silicon Valley have certain values that are not necessarily consistent. I don't want to make sweeping generalizations, but, you know, by and large, they're saying, well, you know, oh, gee, these Christians, they keep watching stuff that confirms their Christianity. And, you know, if you believe that Christianity is sort of something that knuckle dragging, you know, gun and Bible toting, you know, types, then that's not good. You know, it's not good. They're reinforcing their beliefs. And so that leads to the second stage, which is called nudging. And there's a lot of data on nudging. And so the nudging is feeding you information and controlling the information that you see to sort of nudge you out of the sort of wrong ways of thinking about things. And so, you know, what originally turned me onto this was what I was seeing during the COVID, you know, the COVID pandemic, where AI was being heavily utilized to make sure that people did not develop, quote, vaccine hesitancy, when there may have been good reasons to, you know, maybe there were good reasons or maybe there weren't. But, you know, that if you're going to.
Nobody was allowed to see that.
Nobody was allowed to see it. And those that sort of tried to broadcast it were quickly, you know, erased from the public stage. Now, as someone who's interested in human flourishing, where we just got done saying, well, what is human flourishing? Well, it's developing wisdom, it's being able to discern what's true, the ability to exercise your free will, to make good decisions for yourself. Now we're getting into a situation where people are not allowing you to see certain information, where they're trying to manipulate what you believe is true and what you don't believe is true. And so the second stage of this, which is the stage that we're presently in here in Western society, is there's this heavy thumb being put on the information. And it's all going through, you know, a very small number of organizations, Google and a few others that control, you know, 95% of what information you're allowed to see. And so this now begins to be the dark side, right? I think in order for us to flourish, we have to have wisdom, and to have wisdom, we have to be able to make decisions about what's true and what isn't true. And this comes up in multiple areas, you know, political discussions and so on. So the second stage. The third stage, though, is where it just becomes outright coercive repression.
Okay, well, that's a huge. I want to make sure that you have time to talk about the third stage, because We are up against a break right now, Professor Ryle, but this is incredible. And what you're saying, the disinformation campaigns that were going on social media, some of the stuff that journalist Matt Taibbi talked about in his Twitter files that came out, and this is really what in part led Elon Musk to purchase X, you know, which is obviously what Twitter used to be called, is now X. And he wanted sort of this platform for free speech and open debate, and when debate had been stifled about so many issues. So this is a really great conversation we're having with Professor Michael Ryle from Florida Atlantic University, and we will be right back after this break on the Cale Clark Show, 888-914-9149.
This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
I guess you could say that AI is kind of that invisible touch in all of our lives. You're listening to the Cale Clark Show. My guest today is Professor Michael Ryle from Florida Atlantic University, professor of management, author of the new book, Managing the Good Life, commentary on Aristotle's Nicomachean Ethics for Business Practitioners. Really amazing book as well, which we're going to talk about in just a second. But just before the break, Michael, you kind of had your Darth Vader costume on. You're kind of, you know, you're kind of talking about some of the dark side of AI. And there's one big ticket item that you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, that's right. So we were just to back into it, we were talking about the first stage, which was this noticing that people naturally created these self-confirming equilibria and sort of cashing in on it, and then noticing that these self-confirming equilibria reinforced people's beliefs, and that some of those people had wrong beliefs, which led to nudging, which mm-hmm. was presenting information designed to lead people to believe certain narratives. And that's where we are now. So that is where we are now. We know that the Google, you know, I'll mention for your audience, the Google Gemini fiasco, which some of you may mm-hmm. know about, was Google released its version of a illustrating AI, word to illustration AI. And when it was released, the only figures that anyone could sort of get it to reproduce were people of minority status. So someone, you know, entered, well, you know, show me pictures of 17th century philosophers, and got back an American Indian, a black man, a woman with red hair, and a Muslim. And people were actually trying hard to get the AI to put a white person in the diagram, and couldn't, like literally couldn't do it. And the reason that that's important is not because we need more white faces in AI diagrams. I mean, the reason for it is that it shows you that the AI is actually programmed to push a certain point of view. The AI had no trouble accurately depicting pictures of Zulu warriors, for example. You know, mm-hmm. there weren't a bunch of white people, you know, amidst the Zulu tribe when it did this. So that's important because it shows that this isn't just sort of AI accidentally coming up with something. This is a heavy thumb on the scale of the AI that many computer scientists are arguing should be teaching your kids, right? That you need your ChatGPT teacher to help teach your kids stuff. Mm-hmm. Now, so that's very powerful. That is a very powerful technology to influence the way people think. But the ultimate is just to drop the charade and not nudge people, but just outright coerce them and oppress them. So in China, as many of your listeners will know, they have social credit scoring, which is China observes everything that an individual does. They record everything on their phone, all the things that they see, everywhere they go. There are cameras everywhere. And at the end of the month or at the end of the day, you get assigned a social score based upon how well you're following what the Chinese Communist Party wants you to be doing. And then based upon that score, certain things are open to you and certain things are closed to you. So if you're really bad and really offensive, you may not be able to get a job, or your kids may not be able to go to school, or, you know, you may not get health care. Mm-hmm. All of those things can sort mm-hmm. of be turned on and off. And you can see that the temptation towards that is very strong
right.
when people were pushing the vaccine passport. And at first that sounds, oh yeah, vaccine passport. Gee, that sounds like a good idea. Maybe, people can see whether they have a vaccine, they've been vaccinated. But that was a very rudimentary social credit scoring system. The dimension was the government deciding that you should or should not, that you should be vaccinated, your phone showing whether or not you had been vaccinated. And then certain things are turned on and off for you, like going to church or, going shopping right. or going, people were talking about limiting health care. That was just one dimension, but you can see that once people get used to that idea, then, why not some other things? How good are you driving? What charities are you giving your money to? We'll just start adding all of these things to it. That is the dark potential future of this technology utilized, for evil. Let's just call it what it is and hindering and blocking human flourishing in a very big way.
That is absolutely chilling for so many reasons. And for people who say that this could never happen in the West, don't forget, during the trucker protest in Canada recently, bank accounts of the truckers and everyone who supported them were frozen by the Canadian government. And this was a very shocking development for Western liberal democracy. And so it's just an idea of how things that might happen using technology, using AI, the banking systems obviously tied into it. We did a recent episode about that here on the Cale Clark Show. But Professor Mike Ryle, we only have a couple of minutes left here, but I wanted to, we will have you back to talk about your book about Aristotle and managing the good life. And there's just so much richness there because, as you've said often, Aristotle is kind of the gateway drug to Catholicism. And I love that statement. And that book, of course, is published by Ethics Press. You can find it online, order it. It's called Managing the Good Life, a commentary on Aristotle's Nicomachean Ethics. But I want you to tell me about what's going on right now at FAU in the business school and why it's important for Catholics to be in business schools and in the business world.
Oh, absolutely. So FAU is terrific. As you said, I spent 15 years at the University of Toronto, which was an amazing school with a lot of amazing colleagues. But at FAU, I have to say the students that I have are amazing. I would say about half my students are the sons and daughters of immigrants, and I feel so rewarded. The people, and this is not taking anything from the amazing students that I had at the University of Toronto, one of whom is the co-author on the book that you mentioned, Lauren Moss, and I don't want to forget to mention her, an amazing student within the joint law and business program, and just a terrific person and someone I was very happy to work on this book with. But they're going to be good and succeed no matter what. Basically, they're all high-end students. And at FAU, these students are really serious about their education, and they see it as the way they're going to get a leg up. And I absolutely love teaching them. The business school is a very market-oriented school, and I've got amazing colleagues, who all of whom are super smart, work really hard. So I couldn't be happier. I love it. I absolutely love it here, and I'm just delighted to be here, and I'm delighted to be teaching and working with all these terrific, terrific people.
Oh, that's incredible. And my apologies to Lauren Moss, who co-authored the book with you, Michael. Yeah, she's not going to send me a Christmas card this year.
She would. She's that kind of person.
She's that kind of person. She's got great ethics because of Aristotle. So she's got great human virtues. I love it. And just a quick word about, got about 30 seconds here. Why is it important for Catholics to be in the business world?
Well, business, you have so many opportunities to influence the way the world develops. You have so many opportunities to create virtuous organizations, right? Organizations that are contributing to human flourishing, both in terms of the products and services that are being offered, but also in terms of the organization that you develop, the people that touch the organization, work in the organization. If you've got that vision of your role in life, for us, of course, is to serve God, and that means helping other people flourish as a central part of your life, then boy, you know, business is just a terrific opportunity for you to do that.
That is fantastic. That is well said. So if you're a student and you're thinking about going to grad school, maybe doing an MBA, maybe just studying business at the undergrad level, think about that and look up, of course, online, the professor of management at Florida Atlantic University, who's my guest today, Professor Michael Ryle. He's also the policy director of the Madden Center for Value Creation. Well, you've certainly created a lot of value in this program today.
Oh, thank you, Cale. It was Michael, such an honor to be talking with you. I can't believe how fast the time went by.
I know. It's always a pleasure, always a pleasure. And the book, once again, Managing the Good Life from Ethics Press, a commentary on Aristotle's Nicomachean Ethics aimed at business practitioners by Michael Ryle and Lauren Moss. We don't want to forget you, Lauren, even though I did earlier. And I know you'll forgive me. But listen, thank you for listening to The Cale Clark Show today. Check the podcast. Share it with a friend. I'll be back tomorrow. Stay tuned for Trending with Timory and the Family Rosary across America right here on Relevant Radio. Jim Shaper produced. Miranda Sinisteros took your phone calls. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.